morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Forte in Washington. Today is Thursday, August 3rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Former President Donald Trump will be arraigned for the third time today, Thursday.
Donald Trump is being charged individually as Donald Trump, but there is a conspiracy, which means that there's a collusion between two or more people to obstruct justice or to defraud the United States.
Sudan's conflict continues to spread and intensify 15 weeks after it began. Nigeria's Labour Congress will decide today, Thursday, whether to suspend its nationwide protest over the removal of a fuel subsidy. Liberian political parties fail to provide a 30% quota for women as that country prepares for elections in October. Niger's military leader is defiant in the face of a potential military intervention by ECOWAS.
The military leader, General Abdrahman Tchani, made a speech to the nation. Abdrahman Tchani totally rejects this cynical and iniquitous sanction, which aim for him to humiliate the defense and security forces, Niger and its people.
And some of your messages in honor of English to Africa's 60th anniversary. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Former President Donald Trump is scheduled to appear in a federal courthouse today in Washington, D.C., after being indicted on four criminal charges. The charges stem from an investigation into attempts to overturn the 2020 election. David Monda is a professor of political science at City University of New York. He tells VOA's Douglas Mpunga that the charges against the former president are serious, especially given the fact that the people close to the former president might have to give evidence against him.
He has to appear before the courthouse and he has to present himself and answer to the charges. The expectation is he's going to answer that he is not guilty of the charges, and then the proceedings for the case will then continue from that point.
In this particular instance, there are co-conspirators and there are witnesses who are very close to him. We got from the statement that his former Vice President Mike Pence made notes and has made comments to that effect. What do you make of that?
So there's a lot going on there. When you think about the first element of what you just asked me about, the co-conspirators. So these are individuals who are named as co-conspirators, but they've not been indicted. They've not been listed, so we don't know exactly who they are, but we can only speculate on who these co-conspirators are. What I mean by that is that what's going on right here is Donald Trump is being charged individually as Donald Trump, but there is a conspiracy, which means that there's a collusion between two or more people to obstruct justice or to defraud the United States. So I guess this is really the crux of the challenge around who was Trump colluding with in the furtherance of a crime against the United States, which is the first part of that. In the second element of Mike Pence is this broader question about the role of the vice president. We know constitutionally in Article 2 of the Constitution, his role in terms of overseeing the process of counting the Electoral College votes is really ceremonial. He's just confirming the results of the election. What Trump wanted the vice president to do, or the former vice president to do, was to actually reject the results, or at least return the results for the election back to the state. And that's a problem. Why is it a problem? Because what the prosecutor said, the special prosecutor said, was that the vice president is on record, at least from his statements, as indicating that Donald Trump was actively engaged in trying to obstruct justice or interfere with the process of Congress trying to confirm the results of the election. Donald Trump is innocent until proven guilty, but these are huge claims, and these are felonies. So they are crimes against the United States, the Union. So this is a really, really difficult situation for Donald Trump.
David Monda is a professor of political science at City University in New York. He spoke with U.S. Douglas Mpunga from New York City. The conflict between Sudan's army and the paramilitary rapid support forces has been spreading and intensifying 15 weeks after its reinception, according to a report released today by the think tank Sudan Transparency and Policy Tracker. In an interview from New Jersey with my colleague Nabil Biazio, the director of the group, Suleiman Baldo emphasized the need to put more pressure on Sudan's warring parties to stop the fighting. He also said different mediators must coordinate their efforts to achieve peace.
War that began on April 15th is spreading to parts of Sudan where it wasn't active, and it is intensifying, starting with Khartoum, where most of the fighting occurs. And in Darfur, where the government forces, the Sudan armed forces, suffered setbacks as the rapid support forces took over control of several army garrisons in Darfur. And therefore, the situation over the last 4 weeks, as outlined in Sudan Conflict Monitor, issued by Sudan Transparency and Policy Tracker, indicates that the fighting is really affecting more people in terms of its humanitarian effect, and it's more severely disrupting humanitarian deliveries, the forcing thousands of people to leave their homes. The situation is really serious and concerning.
In the report, you mentioned the potential Russian influence here. What are the potential consequences of Sudan seeking support from Russia in resolving the conflict? We have seen the deputy head of Sudan's Sovereignty Council, Malik Agar, who is on the side of the army, of course, visit Russia twice in the last 2 months. How do you read this?
Most of the armament of the army, the National Army of Sudan, are of Soviet era or Russian origin. And Sudan has also developed its weapon manufacturing capability with a lot of capacity transferred from former Soviet republics. And therefore, it is expected that the army would turn to Russia to replenish its war machine, because during the current conflict, it has lost a lot of vehicles, aircrafts. It will need spare parts for the functioning Air Force assets and so on. And that's why you would expect that the visit by the vice president of the Sovereignty Council, Malik Agar, to have discussed this issue, although this doesn't appear in the official communique from the visit. Malik Agar also represented Sudan in the summit held by President Vladimir Putin for African states. Nothing was mentioned about military hardware being shipped to Sudan, but I expect this to have been the main topic in the discussion between the two. There is another aspect to the Russian involvement, which is that of the Wagner Group, which is present in Sudan and which is engaged in business deals both with the rebel support forces and the Sudan armed forces.
That's Suleiman Baldo, director of Sudan Transparency and Policy Tracker, sharing his insights on the ongoing conflict in Sudan with VOA's Nabil Biagio. Defense chiefs of the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, are continuing their meeting in the Nigerian capital, Abuja, to discuss the ouster of President Mohamed Bazoum of Niger. This as a sub-regional delegation led by former Nigerian President Abdusalami Abubakar arrived in Niamey on Wednesday. Meanwhile, the country has begun to feel the impact of some of the sanctions imposed by ECOWAS, including a cutoff of electricity by Nigeria. ECOWAS has rejected the coup and vowed to use all means necessary to return ouster President Bazoum to power. VOA's French to Africa reporter Abdul Razak in Niamey tells me that the new military leader has been speaking to the nation with warnings against an ECOWAS military intervention.
Yes, good morning, James. For this question, let's say that there is not yet enough information about this visit of ECOWAS delegation here in Niamey, but she arrived in the early afternoon of this Wednesday, and she was to have meetings with the crisis stakeholders. In addition to the leaders, the former president of Nigeria, Abubakar Abdusalami, the delegation is composed of the president of ECOWAS Commission and the emir of the federal state of Sokoto in Nigeria.
There were reports earlier Wednesday that Nigeria had cut power supply to Niger. Did you notice, or do you notice, any interference in the power supply where you are in Niamey?
Yes, James, I confirm this information of suspension of the supply of electrical energy by Nigeria as one of consequences of the sanctions that ECOWAS and EOMOA made on Niger after this coup d'etat. And a note from the electricity distribution company that I consult also indicated this. Today here, for example, in Niamey, several districts of the capital, electricity energy has not been supplied at 100%. The company in charge carried out a rationing by carrying out load shedding. It is the same situation in several towns in the interior of the country.
Did you say that the military leader visited Mali, or did someone from Mali visit Niger?
Some members of the military council who overthrew the regime began a tour of sub-region on this Wednesday. This is how they were in Bamako in Mali, where they meet the transitional authorities, in particular Colonel Assimi Goïta. This evening, they must also go to Ouagadougou in Burkina Faso. As you know, these two countries express their solidarity with the Nigerian military after the sanctions imposed by ECOWAS and EOMOA.
We understand that Wednesday was the Independence Day of Niger. What did the military leader have to say?
Yes, James, the military leader, General Abdrahman Tchani, made a speech to the nation. As you know, every year, August 3rd is the Independence Day of Niger, and the president made a speech to the nation on this occasion. So General Abdrahman Tchani made this message, and the message was an opportunity for him to react in particular to the sanctions pronounced against the country by ECOWAS and EOMOA, as well as the probable military intervention against the country. So Abdrahman Tchani totally reject this cynical and iniquitous sanction, which aim for him to humiliate the defense and security forces, Niger and its people. Tchani also added that if ECOWAS should go as far as its logic, mainly a military intervention, it will be the last great fight that the people of Niger will make for a true independence of Niger.
VOA's French to Africa reporter Abdul Razak was speaking with us from the Niger capital, Niamey. Nigeria Labour Congress says it will decide today, Thursday, whether it will suspend its nationwide protest over the suspension of a fuel subsidy. This after the group met with President Bola Tinubu on Wednesday. The Congress had its first day of nationwide strike on Wednesday over the removal of the subsidy. They are also demanding a new minimum wage. Emmanuel Ubuaja is the Secretary General of the Nigeria Labour Congress. He tells me that they will continue to seek solutions because workers depend on the government intervention to reduce and not to raise fuel prices.
It was more rewarding than the almost 6 weeks we had with his staff, so to say. So because it was short but straight to the point. And we're able to elicit the commitment we've been seeking in the past 6 weeks on some of the key burning issues, and also extract some information on some of the concerns we've had. So it was quite a rewarding meeting.
You've been protesting about the removal of fuel subsidy. Did you talk to the president about that?
Absolutely. Because the challenge we have is removing fuel subsidy, because the main basis for the so-called removal of subsidy was the quantum of money they felt they were putting in it. And a large chunk of that was based on corruption. But that wouldn't even arise if we had been refining in Nigeria. So our interest is in finding out, or was to find out, what is the government's commitment to having these products refined in Nigeria? Because we are aghast at his last broadcast to the nation, no mention was made of our refining capability But at this meeting, he assured that the Port Harcourt refinery at least would be coming upstream by December. So one needed to be sure that we're not going to be subjected to the vagaries of international market pricing of crude and then also of the funny status of our currency.
One would say, why did you not do this before going for the strike or the protest?
He wasn't available. Part of our frustration was even to get his officials attend to the meeting that we had agreed on the 19th of June. They weren't there. If you had followed, you would have seen our frustration. We had had to leave the presidential conference room venue of the steering committee meeting due to the absence of the officials that were to meet with us.
You said the meeting was rewarding. Once again, did the president make any commitment about your concern?
No, rewarding in the sense that for a frustrated lord, a lord that had not been able to hold down ordinary officials of state, to now have the president spend time to take on these issues by himself directly, definitely was more rewarding than what we have been doing with his officials for the past 6 weeks.
Do you plan to meet with the president again?
No, he committed to setting up a proper structure for the engagement going forward, not the one that we're used to. He appreciated the problem and then committed to having the proper structure that will have us carry this process forward.
Emmanuel Ubuaja is the Secretary General of the Nigeria Labour Congress. He was speaking with us from the capital, Abuja. Women are underrepresented in Liberia's upcoming October elections, according to the National Elections Commission's provisional list of aspirants. As Denise Nipson reports from Monrovia, the commission says that out of a total of 1,030 registered aspirants, only 15% or 153 are women.
Having produced the first elected female president of Africa and led many campaigns for women's political participation, Liberia is struggling to achieve a 30% quota for women in all levels of government. Liberia does not have a law that compels political parties to meet that goal. However, the Elections Commission and political parties signed an agreement to encourage women's representation. Antoni Fasia Harris is a women's rights activist.
It's a bit appalling, it's a bit discouraging that women agency, their contribution to our political context through representation is still not being recognized. Political parties have not shown much interest.
The much smaller Liberia Transformation Party is the only one that has met the 30% quota. The national chairman, Ibrahim Tiakwisi, says the selection process included scouting potential females with no primaries and reduced registration fees.
We went into communities, into districts, potential women who are planning to run. We interview them. If we see that you are up to the task, we encourage you, we bring you in. We don't put people against you. We try to manage you to make sure that you build your confidence to face in the world to compete.
President George Weah has stressed the issues of female participation, but in his party, the Coalition for Democratic Change, CDC, only 12 of the 82 aspirants are women, which is only 15%. Liberia's political parties signed a memo of understanding to ensure that women gain 30% representation on their candidate nomination list. Fatou Soare, the chairperson of the CDC Women's League, explains the challenges of reaching these goals.
I reach out to a lot of those women and we were happy because we had more than 40 names. The party has our constitution. Before you can come on a party ticket, it's a democratic process that everybody has to go through, which is the party primaries. I started to place calls to someone in, but it was bad for you that someone in said that, hey, I don't think I'm prepared financially.
Augustine Tama, the head of the Secretariat of Liberia Elections Observation Mission, Leon, expressed frustration that there are fewer women in politics this year.
There is a sharp decline in women political participation from 2005 to 2011 to 2017, and now we are experiencing even more further decline.
According to World Bank data, Liberia has one of the lowest rates of women's representation in the legislature in Africa. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I'm Denise Nipson in Monrovia, Liberia.
This week, VOA English to Africa service is celebrating our 60th anniversary. You, the listeners, have been sending us your congratulatory messages and suggestions about our programs. We have two messages this morning. The first one is from James Rue Majok of Mayom County in United States, South Sudan. It is read by VOA's Chinedu Ofor. The second is from Mustafa Diallo of our affiliate Voice of Hope in Maryland County, Liberia.
Hi, VOA Africa. I'm excited to share my happiness with you, especially VOA journalists who are working tirelessly day and night disseminating accurate information worldwide. I have been a VOA Africa listener since 1996, during the time when we South Sudanese were struggling for our independence from Sudan. There is one thing that led me to listen to VOA Africa Radio. VOA News used to interview our late leader, Dr. John Garang de Mabua, about how South Sudanese will achieve their goal for independence, and it came to reality when we got our independence from Sudan government with the support of Western countries. My special thanks to VOA journalists Peter Clotty, James Barty, Nabil Biagio, John Tanza, plus other journalists whose names I didn't mention.
Good morning, VOA. Happy 60 years anniversary. I'm Mustafa Jalo, a radio technician in Maryland County, Liberia. We are one of the affiliate radio stations that really opposed of America in the southeast of Liberia. And most of the program that the people like here is Daybreak Africa. Daybreak Africa by James Barty. We hardly listen to that program. Where even where you have, if you don't have electricity, if you can have, you can be angry about that. Not listening to Daybreak Africa on our radio station, Voice of Hope, 103.2 FM. And I want to say happy anniversary to VOA for 60 years. And I wish them more years to come. And Mustafa Jalo, thank you very much.
Please keep sending us your voices and text messages about our 60th anniversary to this WhatsApp number, plus 1-202-258-3076. Once again, plus 1-202-258-3076. And that is it for this Thursday, August 30 edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for being our guest this morning. For more Africa news, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barty in Washington, saying, have a great day, and please be safe, whatever you do.